TDI, so I'm just kind of scrolling through. I've got John, James, Brian. Is Moses from TDI, I assume?
Yes. Moses works with me, Joe Betsy.
Okay, what's Moses' last name?
Chow. C-H-A-O.
Okay. A-U. Okay. A-O. I've got James, I've got Brian. And then I guess y'all just let me know if I've left anybody off.
Right. Joe Betsy, I was expecting a couple of folks from Government Relations, Caitlin Merrick and Reagan Elmer. I do not see them as yet.
Okay. We'll just make a note when they join.
Okay.
And Marvin, you've got the usual. We've got our new claims director. Help me again with her name. Anna?
Annette Evans.
Okay. All right, let's just see here. Okay, so the date is March the 3rd, 2021, and the time is 9:04 a.m., and I am calling to order the regular quarterly meeting of the Texas Property and Casualty Insurance Guarantee Association's Board of Directors. This is a virtual video conference-only board meeting that is being conducted in accordance with Governor Abbott's March 16th, 2020 directive on virtual and telephonic open meetings. Currently, we have 8 board members and 1 public member vacancy. All board members are in attendance, so a quorum is present. We are joined by board counsel Shelby Betts, and TP SIGA staff includes Marvin Kelly, John D'Amato, Verda Rim, Stephanie Hernandez, and Annette Evans. Joining us from the Texas Department of Insurance is John Alexander, James Kennedy, Brian Rewe, John Peters, and Moses Chow. I do want to remind everybody that we do have competitors in the marketplace on the board, and that we need to exercise care in avoiding any discussions that might give rise to an allegation of violation of state or federal antitrust laws. Item 2 on our agenda is a review and approval of the summary of the official minutes of the December 10th, 2020 regular meeting of the Board of Directors. Do I have a motion to approve?
So move.
Yeah, I'll second it, Tiffany.
Okay, so Director Garrick moves, Director Reiner seconds. Are there any questions or any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. But now, at this point, the time is 9:06 a.m., and we will, as authorized by Section 551.079 of the Texas Government Code, the board will adjourn into closed executive session to consider the Texas Department of Insurance Rehabilitation and Liquidation Oversight Report.
We're staying on this Zoom, correct?
Marvin, we are just going to stay on this one, right? Since there are no members of the public, or are we expected to sign off and log on to something else?
No, we're going to stay on this one for now. We have, just for everybody's benefit, we have a couple people coming in who make presentations from the insurance department. I think the attorney and the special deputy receiver are going to dial in and participate with us in the executive session as part of that presentation concerning the GIE.
Okay. The time is now 10:38 a.m. and the Texas Property and Casualty Insurance Guarantee Association has concluded its executive session with the Texas Department of Insurance. We are now back in open session, and we do not need to take any action stemming from that executive session at this time. So we will move on to agenda item number 4 and Marvin Kelly.
All right. I think it's still morning, so good morning again. We look through a meeting summary in reference to what's going to be presented, who's going to be making those presentations. And then I'll do an update on COVID, as well as how we fared through the winter storms. So with that, the first 2 items following my presentation are the chair of the executive committee. And she's going to speak to the plan of operation, the final plan of operation, which was approved by the department John indicated that I'll receive a letter from the acting commissioner. I haven't received that yet. She'll update us on that. And then go on to the ad hoc corporate governance committee, which was formulated from our last meeting as a result of a letter we received from the Department of Insurance concerning corporate governance. Not only us, but the other guarantee funds received that same letter inquiring about governance for guarantee associations. And following that, we'll have our new and improved claims committee with our chair, Mark Tasui, and our new and improved claims director, Annette Evans, that you'll meet for the first time. And they'll be presenting information, actual claims information on HDIE and HCCC, so you'll know the numbers that are coming in on that. With that, following that will be the Finance and Audit Committee report, and I think our chair, Tiffany Reiner, has instructed John D'Amato to make the presentations in reference to that. And then we'll go into our second executive session to continue our discussions on the HDIE. And if you'll turn with me back to under the executive director's report, there's a management update on TP SIGA's COVID-19 response. And basically, that's what we've done. We really haven't changed anything. My expectation is we're going to continue with these particular procedures and policies in reference to how we operate, even though we had an announcement by the government yesterday just eliminating the mask mandate. We're still going to operate within our organization with the mask, with the temperature checks, and with the social distancing. But if you'll turn under the Human Resources tab, that's the minutes from the Human Resources meeting. There's no action items in reference to it. But I wanted to ask if you would turn to the second page, and there's something in there related to COVID. And this is, you can kind of read the first report in reference to what we've already done. But in that third paragraph, it says 4 employees reported either exposure or risk exposure to COVID-19. We have had employees who have been exposed by family members at different events. And what we've done is we've followed the CDC guidelines in reference to that. We quarantine immediately, and then we require the individual to have a test and come up with a negative test before they come back into the organization. We've had 4 employees that have actually gone through that. One was a false, and I think a lot of them are false negatives. One was a false negative when a person was on vacation and they received a false negative, and then they, or false positive, is it positive, negative? False positive, and then they tested, and then they came back negative. So we've had those indications, and we follow the CDC guidelines in reference to that. Now, with that, I'll move on to that storm and what we did in reference to that. And I'll start with the fact that we actually start planning on Thursday prior to the storm, because if you remember, the snow was supposed to come in that following Friday. So what we did is we immediately start planning, and we initiated having a skeleton crew, more so for Friday as opposed to bringing all our employees in. We were working remotely at the time, but we decided because of the weather changes, we would go ahead.
And I have a vagina that I know very little about. I'm not alone. There's a myth that using a tampon is the same as losing your virginity.
I have no idea what that is.
Yeah. Oh my God, Mom, no.
It's technical difficulty again.
A statewide mask mandate is going to end.
Okay, we're going to work on this for a minute. I'm not sure why someone came to the meeting. But it is an open meeting, so it just might be they're excited to hear what we have to say today. Let me continue as Stephanie works on eliminating whoever just came on to our conversation. And let me just continue with what we did in reference to the storm. One was we brought a skeleton crew on that Friday in order to get the checks ready, because we still have to get the checks out for workers' compensation and a lot of the auto claims to ensure that people can get their cars out of the shops. Over that weekend, we had other meetings. We were in constant contact with our employees. The directors had a meeting on that over the weekend where we had to determine whether we're going to open up on Monday and Tuesday. And we decided at that point that we wouldn't open up, that we would continue operating remotely and not have people come into the office, because that's when the storm really hit. And we made a decision that we would meet on that Tuesday to decide about the rest of the week, which we did. And one of the things we did as well is we called off Wednesday and Thursday, and we said, okay, we still have to get the checks out. They got prepared on Friday. So we identified key personnel that we could bring in that Friday afternoon when we had the thaw, and so that we could get the checks out. So people from planning and business services, we identified two employees there. IT came in and a few others. I was in to oversee. John D'Amato came in. He's pointing at himself. John was here as well. And we came in and we got the checks distributed. In terms of the building, our major concern was damage to our building. Remember, we had those outages all over. We didn't lose any power here at the facility. And we had backup for the computer systems. And our concern was, we can't really operate. We want to ensure that the computer systems are operating properly. But there was no downtime here at the facility. We actually had no physical damage. We had no water issues. So it continued to operate. We came in that Monday. We were able to get all the checks out and continue with our normal operations. One of the things that happened that was kind of unexpected for us, we kept in contact the entire time with all of our employees by email. And what we found out were there were a lot of people that didn't have water and a lot of people that didn't have power. So a lot of the employees and even the contractors offered up to other employees to come to their homes if they didn't have power, if they didn't have electricity or water or anything of that nature. One of the contractors put out, hey, I got electricity, I got water, and I got a couple rooms if anybody wants to come over. We also found out a number of people were afraid to drive in the ice. You can't drive in ice, you can drive in snow. If you've grown up in that type of environment, which I have, I actually knew how to drive, and I actually cleared my driveway and then de-iced it and put salt on it, and my neighbors were wondering what I was doing. A number of our employees were stuck in their homes and not able to get out or not willing to go out, but we kept and we knew what was happening with each and every employee. So we took whatever precautions we needed to take to protect our employees. Our real focus was, even coming in earlier, was to ensure that nobody was exposed. Nobody would drive in those type of conditions. We were more concerned with the health of our employees. So that pretty much wraps up all the different things we did in reference to that. But I will point out, under that human resources report is not only the minutes, but our chair of HR, Mike Wilson, asked that we would continue to place in that packet staffing reports, updates on our benefits, and that's in each and every agenda package. And it talks about PTOs, holidays. This is just for the new members, so that you'll have that information as we go through the year. So that is in there in the minutes for the human resources report is in there for your reading pleasures, a lot of information in reference to what we discussed in those sessions. So with that, take any questions if you have any questions, and if not, I'll turn it back over to the chair. Thank you.
Marvin, I have a question. I think it may be obvious, the answer, but Governor Abbott changed, his orders yesterday, but I'm assuming that the association is going to continue to maintain its current policy with respect to COVID mitigation.
Yeah. We are, and I think the discretion that the governor gave with that was businesses can make those decisions on their own in reference to that. So we're going to continue to do our checks. We're going to continue to wear masks. We're going to continue to social distance for anybody and limit the number of people within our office. We only have about 17, 18 employees, 30,000 square feet. We have the ability to continue to social distance.
Okay, so you are continuing the work from home for those who are able to?
Yes.
And okay.
What was interesting is we had one person that came up thought they had been exposed. And I have to give props to John again to go out and set up that person so that they could operate out of their home. What we didn't know, we found this out, is the person didn't have internet. We think everybody has internet, but if you're coming into the office, you don't need internet. So we were able to set up something at her house so that she could quarantine and go through the entire process before she came back into the office. Other questions? Hearing none, turn it over to the chair.
Okay, thanks, Marvin. And I will note for the record that Reagan Elmer and Kenesha Schuster from the Department of Insurance joined us. On to item number 5, which is an update on the plan of operation. As Marvin said, the Acting Commissioner Doug Slape approved TP SIGA's revised plan of operation, I believe, on February 22nd. And I want to thank John Alexander and James Kennedy and Patty Otto and Shelby for their hard work in helping us get this revised plan of operation finalized and approved. It was a big undertaking, and hopefully we won't have to do that anytime soon. Does anybody have any questions on that item? If not, we will move on to item number 6, which is the Ad Hoc Corporate Governance Committee, which is getting off to a slow start, but I will be getting with Michelle and Larry soon to have our initial meeting. Since the last meeting, I've done a little bit of preliminary groundwork in reviewing some of the past corporate governance actions that we've taken at TP SIGA since I've been on the board. I reached out to some of the councils for the other entities that are under the TDI umbrella to see what actions they were planning to take. You know, there's no need to reinvent the wheel. So we'll borrow any idea that's out there. I also reviewed some materials from the National Association of Corporate Directors, the NACD. It's an association our company and our board is involved with. And although TP SIGA is a slightly different animal, many of the best practices and other recommendations that they have are relevant. And I think that's good. It's good food for thought for us to consider. And I think we all agree Marvin's done a really good job in laying a good foundation for board training. But we'll also be looking at, potential other opportunities or additional resources and historical information that board members could access independently. You know, as we approach, are looking at succession planning, we're going to have longtime board members rolling off the board. We're going to have, at some point, our executive director is going to be leaving, and with him will be a lot of historical knowledge. And while we have a lot of that out there piecemeal, I think there's an opportunity for us to just package it in, you know, readily available things that new board members could get back to. I know when I was first on the board, we had kind of this rolling summary of board actions that were significant actions, like from each board member. It was just maybe, you know, several bullets. And I found that real helpful because you could go back. You didn't have to try to find minutes or some things like that. I mean, I think there's some things that we can consider. I'm not saying we're going to wholesale adopt them. We also used to have an annual report. And I don't want to make work for the staff. You know, it might be good if we could end up having some sort of a one-page year-end summary that just helps you digest, like, what were the insolvencies for the year, or what were the significant actions taken. I mean, these are all things that we as a committee are going to consider. I think also just another an inventory of the board and TP SIGA policies, you know, the requests for proposals that are out there, requests for information, and contracts over a certain threshold. You know, there are certain requests for proposals or contracts that the board has not historically seen, those dealing with the third-party administrators and whatnot, and I think we need to have a discussion about that. Again, Marvin's going to be updating us on succession planning for current staff on a periodic basis. We'd like to send a survey to board members to get their input on, you know, any suggestions that they have, observations. You know, we would love to get that as well. And then just to consider whether the board itself or the committees should be looking at some sort of a periodic self-review. So those are just soup to nuts, just kind of things that we are looking at or will be looking at. And I'm going to be reaching out to Michelle and Larry soon to set up our first meeting. So if any of you have any thoughts, like, I'm happy to hear them now, or please feel free to email me or call me.
One comment in reference to that. Actually, I've kept, since the inception of the organization, a document. It has historical minutes or summaries of everything that's been passed. It's just a matter of me handing that off. And if you're interested in seeing that, it's always exciting to me to go back to 1992. It's already available, and I update it. After every meeting, I'll go back and update motions that were made, actions that were taken. So that exists already.
That's great. And it's that kind of thing, though. I think we're just, part of what we're going to be looking at is just having it at a place where board members could come in and access themselves. And there are probably other things out there that would be useful that we don't currently have access to. So that's great. Thank you, Marvin.
Yeah, I can put it on the on our web or whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
And so it's available to the new board members coming in, you know, have the historical.
That'd be very helpful. Anything else? If not, I will hand it over to Mark T.
And prior to that, I wanted to do this. We have a new improved claims director, so you never had an opportunity to meet her. So with the new chair of the claims committee, we also have the new claims director. I'm gonna ask her to step in so you can actually know who she is. And we've averaged, since she's came here, she's been here 2 months, we've had an insolvency every month. So we're trying to keep up with that. That's a particular piece.
I'm Annette Evans. I don't know, Mark, did you need to just want to say anything? I know this is your first claim meeting.
Yeah, I can kick it off. So, yeah, I do want to welcome Annette Evans to her first board meeting. Mike and I did get a chance to talk to her for a little bit before she started her role, but I do want her to kind of give a little background about herself. As Marvin said, she's kind of hit the ground running. She's had a lot of things going on in the claims arena. I think claims have tripled, more than tripled since she's been there. And so there's been also some increase in some external staffing that she's going to give an update on. So I'll just hand it over to you to talk about your background, but also give updates on the ACCC and the HGIE updates.
All right. So, thanks, Mark. I don't know if what Marvin said about being the new improved claim director, I don't know if Jesse would agree with that, because I definitely have big shoes to fill, but I look forward to working with everybody. Most of my claims experience, 26 plus years, was with State Farm Insurance. So with that, we had a lot of experience on a lot of things. So I come prepared to do this work, although the Guarantee Association work is a little different. And I'm looking forward to learning all of that. I did also have some experience with a non-standard Windhaven, who's now in liquidation itself. But that also gives me another frame to look at this work from. So I was happy to have that experience, and happy that it was limited as well. So I'd like to start off by giving a review of 2020 and kind of where we are to date. And this information will go through about February 10th. So there's been some changes since then. But so we ended the year down on our claims inventory. We decreased 11% for the third quarter to the fourth quarter. And we ended the year at 2,263 claims. And as Mark said, there's been significant changes because we started the year at 10,369. So that's, and then the year at 2,000, and then the next month basically having 10,000 claims. So that gave me something to work with when I first got here. Litigation count also decreased by about 12.5% quarter over quarter. So we ended the year at 249 claims in litigation. And since that, we have over 2,000, 2,035. Most of that came from the ACCC insolvency. Fortunately, the HGIE insolvency does not come with that much litigation. Claims staff had decreased by one from third to fourth quarter, so we ended up with 33 full-time TP SIGA staff at the end of the year, and now with the temporary staff we've had to hire to handle the two insolvencies, we were a little over 70 in February 10th. So, and we're managing them well and trying to make sure that inventory, they stay engaged with that inventory. And the good thing about that is we can decrease those people as we see fit as the inventories go down. Earned premium count was down to 224 at the end of the year. It's now to 2,354. And most of those are with Windhaven National ending. So we've handled a lot of those claims. I think we only got five for the month of February. New claims coming in, so I think we are about winding up as far as getting new claims, and we're about ready to handle those UEP claims so that we can get that one lined down. We collected $516,000 in network deductibles and subrogation over the fourth quarter, and year end we collected over $2.2 million in network deductible and subrogation. So that was a pretty good year. And then also we paid $1.8 million on $5.6 million of workers' compensation billings for the quarter. So vendors billed $5.6 million, and through cost containment, we were able to save 66% not having to pay that off, and 70% for the year. So our cost containment folks are doing a real good job of making sure we're paying what is owed only. And like Marvin said, I wanted to give you kind of an update on HGIE. Won't belabor the point. We've already gone over that a lot. As you know, they were officially in liquidation August 11th, 2020, but we didn't start getting the claims until 6 months later. As of the end of the year, we had gotten zero claims. So we just started getting them in January, February, and as of February 10th, we had about 710 of the UDSA records, but we didn't have any other notes, images, payment history, or anything like that. Subsequently, we started to get getting that information. Images, they're still having to root around to make sure we've gotten all of it. I think we've gotten 750 claims. They were only able to find 1,500 images, which we were looking for a little bit more deck pages, things like that. So we're still trying to make sure we have all the images we need to get those claims handled, but it is a lot better than it was before. We're also, as they say, waiting on first notice of loss claims that came in after the liquidation and most of the commercial claims. I think we've gotten five so far. We're still waiting on the others. Conversely, the ACC liquidation is going fairly well. They were, their liquidation date was December the 30th, and then the next month we've gotten the lion's share of their claims. So by February the 10th, we had over 7,500 claims from them. I think we've gotten a couple hundred more since then, but we got immediate access to all the records, images, payment history that we needed. The initial letters were able to go out right away. We were able to get to, or we're getting to, the stays on the legal claims and that we missed on HGIE because, as you know, the automatic stay is 6 months, and we got the claims well after 6 months. So anything we found in liquidation, the stay had already run out. But on ACCC, we were able to address those. So I think that's it. I appreciate Marvin giving me a liquidation every month. It looks like, you know, he may double down on me next month. I think we've got something coming up with Highlands. I don't know if there's going to be much included in that. I think they have been in rehab for years, as I understand. But there may be, I have a meeting coming up about possibly them going into liquidation, and then of course the Benevere. So I look forward to working with all of you and getting these receiverships done. All of the supporting documents is behind in your books for fourth quarter and the year-end summary. So if anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, you can look through the book for the supporting documents. Any questions?
Annette, can you kind of describe the special arrangement we have for the ACCC claims? I think we've reached an agreement, so it's actually a benefit to us with the agreement that was reached.
Okay, yes. So Jesse had the foresight to go in before liquidation was actually finalized and partner with an independent company, CPR. They went in and got a look at what was going on at ACCC. And he was able to interview some of their staff, pick the best of their staff to hire on to his independent company. And they're the ones that's handling the claims. I believe we have about 40 employees, 35 of them were adjusters. The rest were support staff and six supervisors that he kept from CPR to handle the claims. So they're very familiar with the claims system, and they were handling the claims. So that there was very little kind of time in between learning things and getting the claims handled with ACCC. So that's one reason why that went as smoothly as it did. We've had pretty good luck with that. One thing that did come out of that is, again, there were over 7,500 claims. We were a little afraid our system wouldn't be able to handle all of that, so they are working through ACCC's system, but we are working with our IT here, John and his staff, to get that information transported to our system, and we think we're going to do it like one team at a time to make sure that it doesn't, you know, crash our system or have any other effects. They're operating, like I said, with about six supervisors. So our intent is to take one team at a time and bring all of that data and information onto TPSIGA's system to make sure that there's no problems.
Annette, it's Mike Wilson. Between the employee adjusters and the contract adjusters, do you feel like you're adequately staffed to handle the major volume increase in claims that we have?
I do. We continue to watch the ratio of claims to adjusters. So right now on the PNC front, I think we're fine. Workers' comp, with the Medicare coming in, we'll have to wait to see if we need to staff up in that area. As I understand, there's about $16 million in outstanding liability. Not sure what that translates into claims, so we'll have to wait. We currently have seven workers' comp adjusters, so we may need to add to that a little bit more, but I think we're okay with PNC adjusters for now.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, I think John DeMato is up.
Mark, did you have anything more?
No, I'm good, thank you.
All right, Tiffany?
Good morning, everyone. We have a pretty actually abbreviated update today, and John's going to walk all of us through it. And if there's any questions, just stop us at any time. So, John, I'll hand it over to you.
All right. Thanks, Tiffany. Good morning, everyone. And to echo Tiffany's comments, it'll be fairly brief. We're going to go over six areas: information technology and the updates there. Assessments, distributions, and recoveries. We'll talk about the five-year cash flow, how we did overall from an investment management perspective, look at our 2020 budget to actual variance, and then just a brief update with Plan Moran. So firstly, in the way this is shown, and you should see it on the screen, that's great, excellent. If you go to the next page, Stephanie, that'd be great. Excellent. So if you go to Exhibit A, we'll talk about where we are with regard to technology. And in large part, a lot of the technology improvements that we made were a byproduct of the shelter in place and the work from home, as you know. Back in the summer, the board approved, you know, getting new hardware, et cetera. We had that, and then we had the incident that we had with cyber that kind of led to a number of other things. So we implemented, you'll see in the first item, a product called Red Canary. And what that does is that monitors all the ins and outs of activity, any pings, if you will, of activity that come in and out of the organization. It's a service that we're using. And that service isolates what is a concern and then breaks it down finally into a manually worked exercise. It's something that we as an organization and most organizations wouldn't have the technology, nor would they have the manpower to work through such an exercise. So with a negative situation that took place, a positive came out of it, and I think we're going to be in a winning situation with this alert process that we put together. You'll see in the second bullet, we did reveal, Gary Vieira was able, our IT manager, was able to identify that Dell had a buyback program, and we didn't sell back all our desktops, but a fair number of them, and we're collecting about $9,000. So that's money we can use, certainly in other areas, and it was great that we could get some money for those. They did offer a service where they would wipe the laptop data down, and Gary and I scratched our heads and said, you know, who on earth would give their desktops to someone picking them up with a truck with data on them? So of course we wiped those before they went off on that truck, and I got them to take that wiping off the bill too, so that was good. So we made a little more money on those. The third bullet, and you should have received in your email yesterday, we finally received the closing memorandum for that Kroll matter. But as you know, the report was issued, and the closing memorandum should dot the I's and cross the T's for us there. So, and that should be in your email. We're working through the updates as we do annually with regard to our general ledger. That was formerly Great Plains. It's Dynamics is the name of the product. And we're working through some updates there. We have learned that you know, there are opportunities to use the cloud, but because we process payroll internally, going to the cloud, payroll is not offered as a sub-product within that cloud product. So long and short, we're still in good stead with that software product and with Dynamics. Let's see here. There are numerous protective areas that are available through the use of that new system. So are there any questions on the IT updates? Okay. If you flip to attachment B, that will be the assessment history. And as you know, we haven't had any assessments since 2016. Prior to that, in 2010, we actually refunded assessments. We'll talk a little bit later with regard to cash flow and the potential for some future assessments. If we flip to attachment C, that's the estate distributions. And you know, this is something that I learned pretty quickly, and Marvin, you know, reminded me that distributions and recoveries are areas that we can't, they're very unpredictable. And in 2019, you'll see at the bottom of that page, the table, in 2019, we had, in the latter part of 2019, we collected $84 million, which was just, it came out of left field. It was a welcome receipt of funds. But you'll see that if you look at the historics, that was one of our more significant recoveries that we made. In 2010, the recovery was $10.2 million, so vastly less. And as you look at the years that we've listed here from 2001 onward, that kind of represents a very low point as well. So just to kind of put that in a baseline feature. And any questions on those two exhibits? Okay. Great. So item three, and we can reference this to D, attachment D. We have, as you know, we put together models for the different lines of business. And you know, when we talk about auto, not all auto policies are equal. Our recent estates have been with non-standard auto policies. Those policies typically have premium and loss, claim and loss adjustment expense that are vastly less than a traditional or standard carrier would be. So we consider what we know, we consider those historics, we consider the volume of activity that's coming on through as far as claim counts, et cetera, understanding that oftentimes those claim counts could be a shot in the dark too, but be that what it may, attachment D provides the cash flow, which takes into account HGIE along with ACCC. You'll see that when we get into, if you look at attachment D and you look at year two, you'll see that our cash balance, what we're projecting at January 31st of 23, is a negative 7.7. While that, you know, appears alarming, I'm not suggesting that we will need an assessment tomorrow. If things go as planned, then we likely will need to do an assessment, but what could offset those assessments would be any levels of recoveries that we get. So if we think about, you know, what we talked about with AC, or excuse me, with HGIE, we've got some potential dollars there and others. So it's one of those things that here in finance, we monitor on a monthly basis, really our cash positions and what's happening. And one thing that I've been expressing with the finance team is, because our cash flow in many cases is filled with projections, it's important for us to go back and learn from it and say, you know, was our projection too conservative or was it too aggressive, and what do we need to do? So it's proved to be a good exercise. Any questions on our cash flow? Okay. So moving on to item number four, we've got some detail there. Item number four is going to be on page three of the agenda and the minutes. Attachment E would be the full fund strategy report that was provided. But if we go to page three, Stephanie, of the document, that's great. Thank you. Keep going.
That's it.
Is that it? Okay, I can't see. I don't have my glasses on. I was trying to fake it. Okay. All right. So you'll see on page four, no big change with regard to Hayden and Regal, as well as RBC. They're pretty much 50-50 with regard to holdings. There are some differences with regard to the exposures that those money managers have in their allocations. You'll see in the center of the page, RBC's exposure to government increased by 1.1%, while their exposure to cash increased by 1.1%. RBC's remain fairly balanced between government, pass-through, agency, and corporate sectors, whereas PNR, or Payden Regal, decreased their allocation to government down by 2.5% and increasing their pass-throughs by 2%. They've concentrated approximately half of their investments in government bonds. The fun part about this presentation, if you will, is in the next section. We look at the durations. The durations for RBC and PNR are generally the same, you know, 3.82 years versus 3.88 years. So they're generally in that same duration point. When we look over the rate of return, down the bottom, when we look at the portfolios, you'll see that overall, I want to work from right to left, our inception to date, we've been ahead of the benchmark, the Bloomberg benchmark. So we've inception to date achieved 4.71%, the benchmark's 4.42, so we've been ahead by 0.26. For Q4, we were ahead by 0.57, and for the full year of 2020, we were ahead of the benchmark by 0.64. You know, we all know that obviously we don't want to lose money on this portfolio. Our objective is preservation of capital more than anything else, but it's good to see that we're making some money at the same time. So, the rate of return by investment manager is that lower level. And you'll see that the rates of return for the year, Q4 of 2020, were generally the same in reference to the benchmarks. Year to date, RBC was ahead of PNR, but not by much. And the inception to dates were pretty much matched out at that 0.42% of rate of return. There's certainly detail. When we did have our meeting, I know that Larry Bruning went through a very detailed review of the fund strategy report, so he had some good questions that he asked along the way. So any comments or questions from the board on fund strategy and Northern Trust? Great. Okay, if we move to page 4 of the document, page 4 is also supplemented by attachment F. And attachment F is a document that you receive when you get your monthly financials as well. When we send off the monthly financials, we'll include a budget to actual. This attachment, however, provides the full year budget versus the full year actual. So getting to the great news with regard to our budget, overall, we were essentially flat, but our actual was 0.6% less than budget. So we fared very, very well there. If you look at page 4 once again of the document, it's no different than what we've talked about in our monthly reporting. We had some issues with employment expenses. There was, you know, a RIF that was done at the beginning of 2020 that wasn't budgeted for because it was anticipated for 2019. There was some components there that kind of drove the overage in employment expense. And our administrative expenses in 2020, for obvious reasons, were significantly less. We didn't have travel. We weren't attending conferences, there weren't professional meetings, etc., because of COVID, shelter in place, and work from home. The budget dollars that are in here are indeed reflective of the budget amendment that was made mid-year for the $94 million in hardware that we needed. The attachment F, as we've done before, we list out what some of the variances are, significant variances, and I don't know if anybody had any questions, if they had time to look at attachment F, and if you had any questions, I'm happy to take those. With none, we can proceed to item 6, and that's Plant Moran. You can find that on page 5 of the document. And Plant Moran is doing the audit completely virtual. So as a byproduct of that, we won't be incurring any sort of travel expenses, much like we would in the past. You'll recall that for the 19 audit, they came in and did interim work in the fall, and the spring they came in and did year-end work. They're still doing the same thing. In fact, they just started their virtual audits this past Monday, March 1st. We're conducting every other day status calls. Daniel Ebahiaki and Daryl Hodge have done a great job, along with the folks in claims, fulfilling any documentation that they need with regard to testing. And all that's been loaded up, and the communication's going well, and the level of documentation's gone very well on all accounts there. The team in and of itself hasn't significantly changed. Chris Ritter is still the partner on the account. Maureen, known as Mo Salem, she is still the senior manager on the account as well. The senior that's on the account has jumped up from staff to senior, and that's Cameron, and everything's going well there. So we're conducting our SAS 99 interviews with regard to fraud in the audit. I know Marvin will have his, and Daniel had his yesterday, and I think I'll have mine tomorrow. So any questions on Plant Moran or anything that I talked about in this package?
Hey John, this is Michelle Ballady from Travelers. Thank you so much.
Sure.
I did notice in the minutes that there was a question about putting an RFP out at some point. And I just wanted to just make note, I'm not necessarily suggesting it now, but it definitely is something to keep in mind for the future. In Nevada, I sit on the board of Nevada, and we did kind of just reach out and get a couple RFPs, and if anything, and we didn't make a change, but if anything, it just kind of keeps it fresh in terms of price and validates the decision in terms of, okay, service and contract. So I just wanted to mention that in terms of, again, not suggesting it right now, but I found it to be a worthwhile procedure that we went through. And again, we went in kind of not looking to change, but it essentially validated our decision.
No, I think that's great. And I think it's also important for the accounting firms to know that that's an exercise that we go through. Let's say every 3 years we go out to bid, because it makes them less complacent. You know, they can't just assume that this audit is going to take place for them. I think that's great. The fees, I would say, are very, very low. I want to say the fees are about $55,000 a year. That includes our interim work, our agreed upon procedures, that would be the control testing that's done, and the year-end audit and reporting. So it is a good price, but I don't disagree with you, Michelle, that if we could get more for our money, why not?
John, it's Mike. A few months back, the Department of Insurance issued a letter to all board members regarding corporate governance of associations. It wasn't directed specifically to Guarantee Association. It went to all statutory associations. But one of the points in it had to do with the periodic rebidding for major vendors. And particularly professionals. And like Tiffany, I feel like maybe we're not, or I'm sorry, Michelle, maybe we're not at a point where we have to make a change immediately, but it would be good to have a robust RFP procedure in place, I think, as a matter of corporate governance.
Yeah, no doubt. Anything else, Tiffany, or any other board members?
Nothing else on my end.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, Don. So does anybody have anything else before we go into executive session to meet with our council? So, Marvin, what's going to be the protocol here? Are we going to is TDI just going to drop off the line, or are we calling in for a new call, or what?
I think they
log into the second Zoom link. Okay. That
was
sent to them.
They'll log into the second Zoom link that she's already sent. Stephanie already sent that out. So everybody needs to log back in.
Into the second Zoom link.
I'll just stop recording this.
Okay, I don't think I have that second Zoom link, or at least I can't find it. Can you ask her to resend it?
It's in the calendar.
Yes, it's in the calendar.
It's in the calendar.
Yeah. Scroll down to the bottom, to the very bottom. So are we taking a break then going into that? Are we going straight in?
Give John a minute. He has to go admit those individuals.
Okay, give John just a minute. He has to go to admit those individuals from the department back in. And if the chair wants to take a five, 10 minute break, that would be good for us older people.
Well, I don't think you want the TDI back in.
Yeah, that's why I'm confused.
Okay.
I'm going to drop off. Thanks, everyone, and we'll be in touch. And let me know if there are any questions I can answer.
All right.
Thanks so much,
thank
John.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Don't drop out of this one. All the board of directors drop out of this Zoom link that they're in, and they're going to go and log into the second Zoom link that John will admit them in.
Okay. Here's
me. I don't have it on my calendar for whatever reason. I need to have that Zoom link or the sign-in information reset.
Okay.
So, Marvin,
was that at the bottom of the last email that Stephanie sent?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you just stay on this one and kick everybody else out who's not a director or staff?
I can do that too if y'all would like.
We can do it either way.
I think that would be the simpler.
Okay, let's do it that way.
Okay, give me a moment.
You want to tell John?
Yeah.
You want me to tell?
Yeah, tell John. We're getting with John to tell him not to initiate the second executive session. Because he has to add everybody back in. You got to call back in and he has to accept.
Well, did we already lose a bunch of people, though, maybe?
Some have dropped out.
No, the people that dropped out of the Department of Insurance.
Just give me.
Well, it looks like we might have lost Mike Garrick. So
Mike and Michelle, right?
So why don't we just jump off and I'll go to that meeting?
Okay.
I don't have the link information. You need to ask Stephanie to send it to me immediately. I don't want to get lost in the transition.
So, Mike, when you open up your calendar invite.
It's not there. It's not on my calendar, okay?
Is that Michael Wilson?
Mike Wilson. All right, what we'll do is we'll send that off. Let's drop off. We're going to set the other session up. We'll drop off and we'll send you the link.
You have
right here.
All right. Can you send it to
okay.
Mike
Wilson?
The setup.
Mike Wilson?
Setup, the setup.
Yes, Mike Wilson. Yes, so how does go set up, please?
Okay.
See that? I got all these. I feel like I have book flaps here. They're all telling me what to do.
Okay.
Let's
get that other link to Mike Wilson.
So okay, got it. You got it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, we're back. Can everybody hear me?
Yes. Okay, so really there's going to only be seven of us because Mike Wilson's not going to be, he had a 1:00.
Okay.
So I think we're all here, if I'm counting right. 1, 2.
Yes.
Okay. So Marvin, are we recording?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, so at 11:30 a.m. as authorized by sections 551.071 and 551.074 of the Texas Government Code, the board will adjourn into closed executive session to consult with the general counsel, to receive legal advice on issues arising out of the Texas Open Meetings Act, litigation report, and any agenda items. The time is now 12:58 p.m. and the board is now back in open session. We will move on to item number 9, and which is consideration and possible action on matters discussed in executive session. And do I have any motions?
Yes, so I have a motion. So I hereby motion for the following three items. Item 1 is a loan in the amount of $500,000 to the estate of HGIE for the purposes discussed in executive session today. The second item is the terms of the loan negotiated between TP SIGA with the HGIE SDR and TDI to be negotiated by Shelby Betts in consultation with a subcommittee comprised of TP SIGA board members Joe Betsy Norton, Tiffany Reiner, and Larry Bruning. And the third motion is the TP SIGA CFO John D'Amato amend the 2021 budget, if necessary, to account for the $500,000 loan to the estate of HGIE.
Is there a second?
Second.
I hear a second by Director Garrick. Is there any discussion or any questions? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. Next, we'll move on to item number 10, which is public comment. There are no members of the public present, so we have no items there. Item number 11, the announcements and adjournment. The next board meeting is scheduled for June 16th, 2021. And does anybody have any other announcements, or do I have a motion to adjourn?
So move.
I second it.
Who's that, Tiffany?
Yeah,
I have a motion by Director Garrick, a second by Director Reiner. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously, and the meeting is adjourned at 1 p.m.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.